This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
There's an interesting article on the work of Joan Halifax, a recent New Yorker, about her efforts to participate in the bringing of medical supplies to remote villages in Nepal. And it's quite a remarkable account of this woman who is, I guess, now in her 70s somewhere, and manages to participate in these very arduous treks, going deep into the mountains, high into the plateaus there, bringing the most basic supplies distribute to the villagers. And of course part of what she does is lend a presence to the projects and helps raise funds for this kind of humanitarian activity. She is part of now Bernie Glassman's Peacemaker Order, head of UPAYA down in New Mexico, I believe, and generally most known for her work with the dying here. A very active and impressive Zen teacher. And the essay is written by Rebecca Solnit, who is herself a remarkable woman, feminist, environmentalist, activist, essayist. I think she's best known for the essay, Men Explain Things to Me, which took its title from an incident after she had published a book on Edward Muybridge, you know, the photographer and did the motion studies. And she was invited to a dinner party of some important, wealthy people. And she was introduced to the host there by a friend who said that she had just written this book on Muybridge, and the host immediately began to lecture her on this very important book by Muybridge that had just come out and that she ought to know about. And he went on and on for quite some time before anybody was able to persuade him that the woman he was talking to was actually the author of the book that he was recommending. In any case, this account of Joan Halifax's work in Tibet gave me a lot of thoughts about the role of teachers and what we do. And as impressive as that work is, I have to say that I found myself having no desire or envy whatsoever for traveling to Tibet and doing any of those things. Which is probably just as well, since I wouldn't be capable of that kind of travel anymore anyway. The only envy I felt was having someone of the caliber of Rebecca Solnit take notice of the teaching and the work and write so articulately about it. And I realized that at this stage of my life, I'm much more interested in my writing getting out into the world and me personally getting out into the world. I think that Zen, over the years, I think, can have two sorts of effects on people, maybe in tandem. One is the experience of discovering you're capable of doing far, far more than you ever imagined. In a way, the experience of Sesshin is about being able to practice much more intensively, with much more difficulty, with much less sleep and much more pain and much more stress, and somehow learning to rise to that occasion, to function in the middle of it, and in the end simply surrender to whatever comes up and whatever you need to do. That side of practice, I think, can be enormously expansive and give people a much greater sense of their own capacity and possibility in life. And I think the description of Halifax is traveling to Tibet, you know, at her age and doing all this is a kind of wonderful picture of someone who simply says, there's a need and I can do it. You know, I will make this happen. I think, though, there's a corresponding side of Zen which teaches us that we can be complete and at home in whatever circumstance we find ourselves, regardless of way how limited it seems to be, that we find a kind of satisfaction in being ourselves, where we are, doing what we do, and dropping the sense of comparison, dropping the sense of I'm just doing this, but real life out there is much more exciting, or the real students or real teachers are off somewhere else doing the real thing, right? I think that there's something that can happen in practice that really allows you to experience yourself as the embodiment of the practice here and now, and that where you are is the practice, is the real thing. And then it doesn't matter how big or small your reach is, right? Whether you're traveling halfway around the world bringing supplies to hundreds of villagers in Tibet, or whether you're sitting in a little room in an apartment spreading the Dharma to a dozen middle-aged, middle-class white people. Whatever you're doing, well, that's how the Dharma is manifesting. Both are it, right? I think for most of us, we need to hold those two perspectives in some kind of dialectic. I think that the danger in the model of Halifax is that we think that practice has to culminate in something extraordinary. And it's only in these kinds of actions or gestures writ very large that anything makes a difference. And the danger on the other end, of course, is that we become insular or complacent and very settled into our narrow view of things, and we lose track of the potential we have for doing much more. Right? We have to hold on to the sense of possibility even within a narrow circle. I think each one of us, as people, as students, have to look and see where we are on that. Where are we satisfied and unsatisfied? What's enough? What more can we do?